Hey, what is going on, everybody? And welcome to FutureCast. This is episode 001, calling it 001 instead of just episode 1 to differentiate from the other podcast that was started and aborted on YouTube that I think was called FutureCast. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But now they're differentiated anyway. My name is Noah Kravitz. Welcome. Thanks for coming aboard the grand experiment. And who better to start the grand experiment with than my good friend Ian. Ian Stocker is today's guest, the inaugural guest. I hope he feels honored, and I hope he brought his A game. He said he would on Twitter. Ian is an indie game developer, a musician, and music composer for video games, and he does a whole bunch of other stuff. His latest game is called Escape Goat, and you can follow him on the Twitter at Magical Time Bean. Ian, first off, thanks for joining me. Second off, it's weird to be talking to you not in person in the low-rent office that we used to share back when we met. Maybe we'll talk about that if we have time at the end. But let's start out with, why don't you tell the folks, in addition to Escape Goat, what else can they buy online that will help fund your salary? Because you're an indie game developer. You need to make a living. So what else have you done that's out there?
So my games are available for download purchase from my website. If you really feel the need to spend more, you know, if $5 is not enough to give to me for the game and you really want to tip the developer, I've got some merchandise. I'm selling some shirts on Bandcamp right now. If you just go to magicaltimebean.bandcamp.com, there are soundtracks and shirts, and that's about it for now. But you can pay what you want for the soundtrack. So if you feel inclined to spend $50 on the soundtrack, you do have the option to do that there.
I want to talk to you about Bandcamp a little bit later, because I recently, as you know, when we were talking offline last time, I recently discovered Bandcamp by way of hunting down a band who I actually played with once back in New York. But the whole pay what you want model, made famous in the music scene, I guess, by Radiohead, but really interesting. And I wound up totally overpaying for this song because I'd been searching for it for so long, and got a lovely note back from the lead singer. So I hope if anybody pays you $50 for one of your soundtracks, you write them a lovely note. But we won't hold you to that.
I have done that, and sometimes people even write back. Like if they'll spend more than a couple bucks, I usually send like a thank you. Not that I don't appreciate people dropping $1 or $2 in, because I would say only 10% of people who download the album pay anything.
Right.
So yeah,
every
always
bit counts.
Appreciated.
And you mentioned the website. What's your website? Is that magicaltimebean.com?
That's correct.
Okay, cool. So let's start from the present and maybe go backwards. Tell the folks how you guerrilla style marketed yourself and demoed, I think it's the game you're working on now, at GDC in San Francisco recently.
So Escape Goat 2 is in production. It's probably like halfway done, maybe a little more than halfway. And there are a bunch of ways to get attention from the press at GDC. There are some more high cost ways, like getting a booth at GDC Play, which is like in the expo hall. You have a permanent fixture and you get a lot of foot traffic that way. But I think that's something like $3,000 and not quite in the budget that I've got for the game right now.
What did your friend advise you? Nothing is worth $3,000?
Yeah, nothing is worth $3,000. Which is a good starting point. You know, right. It makes you think twice about these big ticket purchases.
Totally.
Although a friend of mine at Discord Games is doing a Kickstarter for his game Chasm, and he went with the GDC Play, and I think it probably worked out pretty well for him, because I think he's well on his way to getting funded. So I think if you've got a good amount of critical mass, it can really help to have that.
Right.
But I'm still in the phase where I just want to kind of show it to whoever's willing to look at it. So I just had my backpack and laptop and Xbox controller, and in one well-practiced motion, I can get it out and get you playing it before you even realize what's happening.
I think that's the key is, you know, before you know what's going on. Back when I was covering the mobile phone scene full time, I remember being accosted at a press event by a guy who had an app called Runkeeper, which at the time I'd never heard of. And now they're huge, one of the biggest fitness-oriented apps in the iOS App Store. So I think that's nice. That's the way to go. It's definitely memorable, which is half the battle these days. So I'm looking at your website right now. You've got Escape Goat, Soulcaster, Soulcaster 2. A lot of really positive reviews here. Nice use of the pull quotes as well. It's an entirely unique gameplay concept, and it's executed extremely well. That's Game Informer talking about Soulcaster 2. How did you get into indie game development, doing it on your own, and what goes into building a game start to finish all by your lonesome? And you mentioned the Xbox controller. What platforms do you develop for, and why?
Okay, I'll try and remember all three of these questions.
Yeah, I'll help you out. I got to practice my my multi-part question asking style.
Well, the easiest one to answer is I make games for Xbox and PC, so all three of my games are on both those platforms, and they're all best played with an Xbox controller, regardless of the platform. Though you can also play with the keyboard.
And on on the Xbox, you can I could log into my I've done this. I could log into my Xbox, go to the I forget what it's called, the indie section, the arcade section.
The best way to find it is to use the search tab on Xbox Live. Because, yeah, finding the indie games marketplace, it's better than it used to be, but it still is not. It won't jump out at you. And finding my game in there, you know, to find out how to, you know, sort by top rated and stuff like that is pretty difficult.
Right. So so that we'll get to a second. I think it's a really interesting thing that leads into the whole Bandcamp thing about discovery in this age where it's you know, maybe easier than ever to develop and publish your own wares, but getting discovered, let alone getting paid, is another task altogether. But real quick, how'd you get into building your own games?
Okay, yeah, the short version of that is I started as a contract musician. I did a bunch of handheld soundtracks for Game Boy Advance and Nintendo DS, and probably like over 40 games in like the 8 years that I did this between 2002 to 2010. And in late 2009, I think I kind of had a contract pulled out from under me. It was a verbal agreement. And so I had a few months to kill. I decided to just go to the coffee shop every day and work for a few hours to learn XNA and just make a game for the first time, like from scratch, where I did everything myself. And Soulcaster was the result of that, which took about 5 months. Nice. So once I'd done that, I kind of didn't want to go back to making other people's games. I kind of wanted to keep making my own games.
Once you're your own boss, it's hard to, I guess there's always somebody, if somebody else is paying, you know, if there's money coming from somebody, I suppose technically they're the boss, but once you've gone on your own, it's hard to go back.
Yeah. You know, I like the freedom of it, and yeah, I do like making my own games and seeing how well they do.
Now, you had, when you were, obviously there are I think, some really fascinating links, psychological or thought process links between composing music and writing code. But when you were doing soundtracks for the handheld games, that got into some programming as well. So when you decided to tackle XNA, that wasn't your first trip to the code writing rodeo.
No, I actually started as a web programmer back before I got my first gig doing music. So I do have some programming background, and working with the handheld systems, it's kind of like working with computers in like the mid to early 90s, where you have really limited hardware, and a lot of it's technical and not just creative. So knowledge of code definitely helped.
How much do you find that your vision for gameplay, you know, either runs into a brick wall in terms of, you know, limited by the programming language or your own mastery of it, you know, and or how much is the gameplay influenced by what you find you're able to do in the code?
I'd say it's totally bound by what I'm able to do. I try and design my games so that it's possible for one person to make it. So I'm trying to not reinvent the wheel, not make something that'll require tons and tons of artwork or levels or whatever. And so I make games that are more around simple systems, and levels are kind of collections of ingredients, really easy to edit. So I definitely design things that are, for a one-man operation.
Right. Now, that being said, there's some dirty rumors flying around that you might actually have a partner on your current project. I don't know if that's top secret and you don't want to talk about it.
That's totally public and it's totally awesome. I'm working with Randy O'Connor, who's an amazing illustrator, and he's doing 100% of the artwork for Escape Goat 2. So we're no longer pixel art. It's totally HD resolution, fully illustrated stuff.
So beyond the workflow changes of having a partner, what does that mean for the game, and what might that mean for the potential of the game to be discovered by more people?
So the gameplay is going to be the same. In fact, the underlying mechanics of the game, independent of the look of it, are the same as Escape Goat 1. It's been smoothed out a little bit. I would say the controls are a little better.
And to back up for a second, and my fault for not asking this earlier, but describe Escape Goat or Escape Goat 2 or Soulcaster. What are your games about? What kind of games are they?
Escape Goat is a puzzle platformer where you see the whole puzzle at once in a screen. And it's kind of like if you've played the classic game Lode Runner or Solomon's Key or even Bubble Bobble. These are games where there's no scrolling. It's just you're looking at the whole thing. You play as a goat. You've been imprisoned for witchcraft, and you use a friendly mouse to overcome traps and machinery. And each level is kind of like a combination of a Rube Goldberg machine and some sort of infernal contraption you're stuck inside. So there's a lot of physics-oriented stuff, a lot of machinery and blocks moving around, and the levels take on a lot of different forms as you play the game.
So it's the classic boy becomes goat, goat meets mouse, goat and mouse have to tackle infernal machinery, biblical narrative, basically, brought to life in a game.
Yeah, I just completely lifted that. It's been done 100 times.
But hey, the best artists have to steal. So, so as far as the pixel art, I obviously, if you've been listening to the podcast for 15 minutes, it's painfully clear by now that I am not a modern day gamer. I did grow up in arcades in the '80s, and Atari and. Well, I didn't have a ColecoVision, but I hung out a lot at friends' houses who did. So I'm still kind of that arcade game ilk. So the whole idea of, what you'd call retro graphics doesn't bother me. But I know that's a lot different than, what EA is pumping out for $50 a title. What has the reaction been to your pixel art games? And did that have any bearing on your decision to hook up with Randy for Escape Goat 2?
I would say it did. The thing about pixel art is it can be polarizing. Some people get turned off by it, but some people have like a nostalgic connection to it. So it's kind of equivalent, I think, for gamers, like traditional gamers. The same number of people who are not interested in it are, interested. So it balances out. And I just use that style because it's something that I could do on my own. To do full illustrations like just takes me forever, and it was not realistic for me to do that. Working with an artist, though, I could make that happen. And I think that although a lot of players don't mind the pixel art, a lot of distributors, I think, have kind of this view that younger players don't understand pixel art or don't like it as much. Maybe because they wouldn't get the reference to the 80s.
Right.
Not that it was intended to ever be a reference. It's just the style I happen to use.
Yeah.
But
and those damn pundits look for references anywhere they can. So.
Yeah. So I wouldn't say that I made this decision to appease them, but it's more of an experiment to see, will this be cool? And when we first started out, and I did my first tests, I totally love the new look of it, and I think it's a huge improvement. And of all the 50 to 100 people I've demoed the game to, I would say everyone has liked the new look of it.
Excellent. All right, we're talking to Ian Stocker. This is FutureCast episode number 001, the premiere episode. FutureSmarter.com is the website. My name is Noah Kravitz. It's the FutureCast podcast where. We're going to talk to interesting people. And when I say we, I mean me. We're going to talk to interesting people about interesting things. Most of them will probably be related to computers and technology and gadgets. But, you know, frankly, you never know. Today's guest is Ian Stocker. He is a game developer whose games include Soulcaster, Soulcaster 2, and Escape Goat. His newest game, Escape Goat 2, is in production right now. You can find out more about Ian at magicaltimebean.com. You can follow him on Twitter at magicaltimebean. And you can find his games on Xbox and PC. On Xbox, you can search for them. Just search for Soulcaster, Soulcaster 2, Escape Goat. That's the easiest way to find him. He's also got some merch for sale, so if you want to tip the developer, as they say, magicaltimebean.com will link you to those, or magicaltimebean.bandcamp.com. Ian, want to talk for a minute about the whole discovery process, and I'm not going to make you speak positively or speak illy, that's not a word, illy of the press, but being a guy who earned a living for a long time reviewing stuff, the whole process of, you know, publishing your stuff, getting it out there, getting it discovered via, you know, via the press, of whom there are, you know, just would-be journalists are multiplying like rabbits these days on the interwebs. Getting it discovered through distribution platforms, through crowdfunding, through bundles, all that kind of stuff. What's an aspiring indie game developer to do these days to try to make a living?
Yeah, that is, I think, the bigger challenge than actually making the game. I think that even if you have a quality title, getting it discovered is really difficult. And there are a bunch of different ways to do this. I can't say that I know too much on this topic, but I can say some things that have helped me a lot. In terms of media coverage, I think getting like YouTube Let's Plays from what I would call YouTube celebrities, you know, people with tons of subscribers, that seems to help the most among people that I know who've had, you know, games launched, and then Northern Lion or Total Biscuit does a Let's Play of it. That's going to be a huge thing.
For the uninitiated, aka me, what's a Let's Play?
Let's Play is the said YouTube celebrity will play the game, record the video of the game, and offer voiceover commentary of their either first experience with it or a more like rehearsed, pre-written review. So you get both the video of the game and the commentary of the critic.
Got it.
And that seems to help a lot. Traditional, like getting published in blogs and you know, other online media, that definitely helps, but I would say not quite as much these days. People just really love to see stuff on YouTube, and people get really attached to their favorite critics on YouTube.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I mean, that's kind of how I made, you know, made my way into a full-time career for a while reviewing phones, was really was unboxing phones on YouTube, which frankly, when I started doing it, I literally would ask the audience, the fans, like, why do you guys like this so much? And, you know, I think it's sign of the times.
It's because they liked you.
This, well, that aside, and they did. They loved me. You guys love me. You really love me. Yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon. You know, spread across all genres. Blah blah blah. I'll shut up. So Let's Plays, a little bit more than the blogs. What about distribution platforms?
So if you're distributing on, let's talk about PC. I'm kind of new to PC because I started out on Xbox. And it's a really different world from what I'm used to. Like in the console world, everything's about just, you know, you finish a game, it's launched, it's done. Like maybe there's a patch for it, but it's all centered around this launch, and you get a good amount of publicity. And then you're on a marketplace where the game can be discovered to some extent for a while. So you get a lot of residual sales, and people, you know, will talk about your game. So when I launched on Xbox, I could expect to see some publicity for like the next month after the launch. I'd see articles, people talking about it on forums, pretty good bump in sales from all of that talk. And the difference with PC is, I think the problem is there's so many PC games and so many ways to distribute that like cutting through the constant, you know, releases is tough. And when I launch on PC, it's like, I'll get 48 hours or so of coverage and attention. And then after that, it's like just tumbleweeds, you know, nothing.
The news cycle is so short these days.
Yeah, exactly.
Across everything.
Yeah. So it's weird dealing with like the, you know, it's almost like the memory span of the internet is 48 hours. It's like a swarm of locusts and you have to be there on Twitter and, you know, you just enjoy your time in the sun. And then it's like as if it never happened and you got to start all over.
Now you've been involved in some bundles as well.
Yeah. So, by far I would say the best, way to distribute on PC is through the Steam platform. But that's actually pretty difficult to get onto. You have to have a pretty good, groundswell of community support to get voted on, or you just have to have a favorite game of, the company that runs it, Valve.
Right.
And so none of my games are on Steam yet. If you do not have a Steam contract, then bundles are a great way to sell games, in my experience. And I would say like 75% of the money I made last year was from these bundles. And as a quick description of how it works, like a few indie developers, maybe four or five, will submit games that are sold as a package at a humongous discount, like 80 or 90% off. Sometimes they're even pay what you want, and you can get like five games for a dollar. And so, you know, you get a lot of exposure because of this, a lot of impulse buys, and even though it's at such a steep discount, the volume makes up for it.
Right. Right. Have you, speaking of volume and discount stuff, have you thought at all about trying to develop for mobile?
I've thought a lot about it.
Because really, it's really easy to get discovered in the Apple App Store. No problem.
Yeah, as everyone knows. It's just, you're guaranteed, you know. Mm-hmm. Constant media, constant featured positions. Yeah.
Totally.
So, you know, like that, that's basically what holds me back from it. I would need to, I would say, redesign my games or design a game that's more suited for mobile. Because, you know, designing something that's meant to be played with a controller on the couch, taking it directly to iPhone, just it won't work out that well. And I wouldn't expect it to be successful. So the amount of effort to port a game to mobile or to work in that space, it's just, that's the main reason that I've not jumped on it just yet. Plus it's just, yeah, it's really difficult to get discovered. It's like being on PC.
Right. So speaking of discovery, last time we hung out, I should have mentioned this at the top. Thank you, Ian, for helping me shake off the rust of my broadcasting chops. Such that they are, all these things as we're going, I'm thinking, oh, I should have said at the top, Ian is a fellow East Bay resident. Go East Bay. He used to live in my neighborhood of Oakland. Oakland's awesome. Support your local East Bay, Oakland, ex-Oakland, current other East Bay town, indie game developers. But, you know, I didn't, so hopefully people are still listening. But the last time we met up at our local East Bay coffee shop, we got to talking about Bandcamp. And it came up because you are selling, soundtracks and merchandise via Bandcamp?
Yeah. So I've been on Bandcamp for a while. I would say just a few months after, my games came out, I decided to sell the soundtracks, and it was more for exposure, you know, like people that would maybe get into the music would want to play the game. So I decided to put them up for pay what you want. With a minimum of zero. You can do a minimum of a dollar or whatever. Bandcamp's really flexible like that. And like I said before, only 1 out of 10 people who download the album pay anything. And I would say the average price point for an album would be like $4. Some people are really generous, and you know, every now and then I'll get like an $8 or $10 soundtrack purchase, which is awesome.
Right.
So it's really strange that, you know, someone would take a $3 game or $5 game and drop $8 on just the music portion. But I think that's really cool.
Yeah. Well, I came across, you know, our conversation came up because I came across Bandcamp recently. You know, I mentioned there was an indie rock band that I knew from, gosh, 10 years ago or more now, back when I lived in New York. And I have a demo tape of theirs kicking around, or I guess now I have the MP3 files. And, you know, I'm prone to these nostalgia trips, you know, late at night or whatever. And one of their songs got into my head, and I thought, man, I'd really love to find, you know, if they ever recorded a proper version of this song. And I did a Google search, and it led me to Bandcamp, which I'd heard of but never actually visited. And it turns out these guys are still around and kicking. The New Lows is their name. They're awesome. You should listen to their stuff. And they moved down to Orlando, Florida, and they've put out several albums, you know, in the past 10 years, and including a version of this song, which I was so psyched about. So it's actually kind of funny. I bought a few of their MP3s, downloaded direct from Bandcamp, and then I also, through Bandcamp, ordered a physical copy of their latest CD. More just to support them. It's sitting on my desk right now, still in the sleeve. I haven't, my computer, my main laptop, doesn't even have a CD drive. So I'll have to go borrow one from somebody to rip it to MP3. But anyway, so I did all this, and then I was out somewhere and wanted to listen to their stuff, but hadn't synced the files over to my phone, which is my primary way of listening to music these days. And only then did I think to look on Spotify, because I pay $10 a month for Spotify Premium. This stuff I bought from the New Lows was the first music that I'd purchased in at least 2 years since I started subscribing to Spotify and paying for that. And so then I looked on Spotify, and it turns out these guys are on Spotify. And, you know, I could have saved myself the money. I was happy to pay them the money to support them. But point being that it was interesting to realize, you know, these walled gardens now that exist. Facebook is probably the best known. You know, Spotify is another one. And you can't search through Google. Apparently, if you can search Spotify through Google, it's limited because the New Lows did not show up as available on Spotify when I searched on Google, but they did show up on Bandcamp, which directed me to Bandcamp, which directed me to, you know, tip the developer, so to speak. And when we were talking about this, you were mentioning that Bandcamp touts their SEO as one of the reasons to do business with them.
Yeah, whenever I make a sale that, you know, they determine the buyer came there through Google, they flaunt it in the email saying, like, thanks to Bandcamp search power. Right. So I think it's legit.
Right. How much are there similar walled garden effects in the indie game publishing, indie game distribution arena?
Yeah, I would say it's pretty much entirely an ecosystem of walled gardens, or like all these separate ecosystems. You know, you've got your console games like Xbox and PlayStation. You've got your mobile games, web games, Facebook games, and then, you know, PC like download games, more traditional PC games. And even within PC games, there's the walled garden of Steam, like I talked about before. And it's they're so successful that I get emailed frequently asking when my games are going to be on Steam because they'd love to try it out. And I say, well, I don't have a Steam contract, but you can just download the game from here. You can buy it and you can play it. Right. But the fact that it's not on there means that it's not going to be in their Steam library of games, and they don't even consider it a game yet. So they've managed to install themselves as this amazing walled garden, like you said.
Yeah, no, it's brave new world in all forms of distribution for sure. And I'm sort of dipping my toes back into the content publishing, content creation and publishing arenas, but decidedly doing it right now for fun, or at least as a process of trying to figure out what about it is fun for me. And I'm not even trying to sell any ads or otherwise make any money off of it right now, because I don't know, it sort of reached this point where it was like, I mean, it sounds like somewhat similar to, you know, your initial story about having that contract pulled out from under you, which, you know, led you to having the time and space, mental space, to explore developing games on your own. You know, kind of a similar thing where I'm actually earning my living. All of a sudden, it's the podcast about me. I apologize. But hey, That's part of what you get to do when you're hosting a podcast, I guess. But, you know, this process of sort of deciding like, well, I'm making my living right now doing something else, but I really miss creating my thing. And for you, you know, creating is games and music. And for me, it's writing and talking and whatnot. So I'm just going to do this. And then, I don't know, do what you love and the money will follow. Or maybe it won't. And then you'll have to stop. But interesting times we live in, to be sure. So let me ask you before we wrap up, when you're not knee-deep in Escape Goat 2, do you play other people's games?
Yeah, not as much as I should. I mean, I really should keep on top of this and especially play more indie games. I guess kind of the reason is working on games, and being so involved in like, you know, indie press and, you know, media, and it's all work related for me. So it's not really something I look at as leisure activities.
Right.
It's, you know, it still stays in the headspace of being work. So
absolutely.
I just need to carve more time out for it, even though it should be fun.
I got so tired of cell phones, after I had landed my dream job of getting to review gadgets and getting to cover the cell phone space as it was exploding. And then eventually I just got so tired of them because it turned into work. But now I love them again. So are there, you have any favorite games you're playing right now?
So just yesterday I downloaded an iPhone game, and I don't play a lot of iPhone games, but this one really got my attention. It's called Year Walk. And, I'm only maybe 20 minutes into it, but it's kind of a adventure puzzle game, and it's very atmospheric, and the artwork is excellent, and it's also really got some scary themes going on with it. A lot of kind of frightening imagery, and I think they've really pulled off something special with it. I'm not too brilliant when it comes to long-term puzzles, like where you're collecting symbols from around the forest and trying to piece them together into a, you know, like
right.
the solution to how to open a door, that sort of thing.
Right.
So I'm struggling with it a bit, but enjoying it nevertheless.
You're welcome. Cool. All right. Well, you've been gracious enough to donate more than 30 minutes of your time to the cause. So I'm going to let you and our dear listeners go. But Ian Stocker, thanks so much for helping christen the new podcast. Soulcaster, Soulcaster 2, Escape Goat, all available now. Escape Goat 2 is in production. Any estimated release date for that or too soon to say?
It's tough to say right now. I'm looking at some different options for kind of what the final game will be and when it will go on sale. Uh-huh. So I'll have some news about that pretty soon.
Great. And it will be an Xbox and PC release?
It'll start out on PC, and Xbox is kind of to be determined.
Right. And I actually, I think just today I saw that Microsoft sent out invites to a preview of the next generation of Xbox, which we can only assume is the rumored new console. So any parting thoughts for us about what you're expecting or hoping for from the next Xbox?
All that would matter to me is, that it's easy to develop indie games for.
Right.
I think they have a great opportunity there to expand what they did with the Xbox 360's indie game market and give that a little more attention, because I think that is the future. And we'll just see. I'm very anxious to see how they play this one.
As are lots of us. I want to say including me, but like I said, I think I downloaded Galaga in addition to Escape Goat, and I mostly use my Xbox for hooking up to Netflix and YouTube.
So I won't see
I know.
In line overnight at Target.
You may see me in line overnight at Target, but it'll be to pick up, pick up some cheap snacks or something.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'll tell you what, if you're camping out, let me know. Maybe we'll do a live cast from the line. All right. Ian, thanks so much for joining us. Everybody, magicaltimebean.com is the website. Go over there. check out Ian's games, buy a soundtrack, buy a t-shirt, support your local indie content creator. Ian, thanks so much. Everybody, thanks for listening. This has been FutureCast episode 001, recorded on Wednesday, April 24th, 2013. My name is Noah Kravitz. You can follow me on Twitter at Noah Kravitz. You can follow Ian at Magical Time Bean. And my website is futuresmarter.com. Till next time, see you next time. Bye-bye.